Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vaibhava ki, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jai Nitai Gopremanandi. So on Wednesday, last week, on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we had nice gatherings at Krishna Katar Prabhu's house. And we had classes on the holy name, and we did some bhajans and chanting. So you're all invited to attend, if anyone would like to come. This Wednesday and Thursday, maybe Friday, Saturday. Just a reminder, if you'd like to come. Also, I'm going to start making bookings for our trip to India this year, our Kartik tour. So is any devotees thinking of coming this year for to Kartik?
I mean, but not in Kartik.
Okay. When is Kartik start this year and
when it finishes? Kartik starts about 3rd or 4th of October. We're leaving Melbourne on the 15th of October. We're leaving a little bit later.
I and finishes one month.
Yeah, Kartik finishes about the 2nd of November. Goes for 1 month. So. Okay, anyway, if anyone wants to come, please let me know because we're booking our tickets and making arrangements. So. I think that's it. Okay. Also, with your fees, if you can just keep up with your fees, try to keep regular with your fees for the course for the rest of the year, if you can, that would be helpful. Someone can take that. So, what did we discuss last week?
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. What did we discuss last week?
About the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj.
Prahlad Maharaj is in Canto 7. We haven't got that far yet.
Yeah?
I'm glad that you're reading ahead. You're a little bit too far.
No, but I think I get mixed up.
That's okay.
I'm doing the two.
That's me and you, we get mixed up. I thought we were on Canto 10, so I did. Any other points?
So Guru Maharaj is saying to the Lord that you are at the end of each millennium. And then you, everything dissolves and goes into your abdomen, and you have the same supreme person. And then he's saying, in the next one, he's saying that you are the super soul, you are the witness of everything, and you are the original super soul, you are the master of the material nature. And then he said that you are full of six opulences. and then he described our super soul. In the next one he has described him as same as Param Brahm and the Brahma Jyoti. So you are the same Krishna. So you pay obeisances to him. And then in the last one he is saying you are the personified benediction, and you treat ignorant devotees like me, you treat like a merciful cow, and the cow gives the milk and protection to the cow. So you give the same mercy to people like me.
That's good. Yeah, nice summary. So we see in the beginning of chapter 9, and Dhruva Maharaj, he is offering prayers to the Lord, because at the end of chapter 8, the beginning of chapter 9, then Dhruva Maharaj, he sees the Lord face to face, which is the goal of our Krishna consciousness. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains that the goal of Krishna consciousness is to see Krishna face to face. So Dhruva Maharaj attains this level of benediction that he actually sees the Lord directly, Shakshat Darshan, which means direct darshan of the Lord himself. And then he begins to offer prayers in the beginning of chapter 9, and these prayers go on for a number of verses. Tonight we'll keep going with the prayers. And then the Lord responds to Dhruva Maharaj. So tonight we'll go from verses 17 to 28, and if anyone has any questions, we can discuss as we go. Any questions or comments so far?
Prabhupada is saying that the Mayavadis are envious of Krishna, but the Bhakta is always surrendering to them. That is the truth.
Okay. My Lord, O Supreme Lord, you are the supreme personified form of all benediction. Therefore, for one who abides in your devotional service with no other desire, worshipping your lotus feet is better than becoming king and lording it over a kingdom. That is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet. To ignorant devotees like me, you are the causeless and merciful maintainer, just like a cow who takes care of the newly born calf by supplying milk and giving it protection from attack. As Prabhupada points out in the first paragraph, that pure devotional service is unmotivated. This is Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. Anyabhilashita shunyam. Jnanakama yanabhitam. So there must not be any other motivation. If there is some other motivation, it is not pure devotional service. It is mixed devotional service. So mixed devotional service, it attracts Krishna, but it will not capture Krishna. It does not control Krishna. Krishna is controlled. The quality of pure devotional service, of prema, is Sri Krishna Kashini, which means it captures Krishna, controls Krishna. So in order to control Krishna, to capture Krishna, then one must render devotional service which is free from any other desire. If some other desire is there, it attracts Krishna but does not capture him. You will not see him face to face, directly. So the devotional service must become unmotivated and uninterrupted. And that is pure devotional service. So, Krishna, he fulfills the desires of the devotees, but not in such a way that the devotee will further desire material things. So we see this is what happens. This is one of the main instructions we learn from this pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. The Dhruva Maharaj, he had material desire, but he approached Krishna to fulfill that material desire. And then Krishna fulfilled, the Lord fulfilled the desire, but not in such a way that he wanted the same thing again. He realized that it was futile, or he realized that it was unnecessary. It will not give satisfaction. So this is what all of us must learn, because at this point in time our devotional service is very much mixed. We have many material desires, many motivations, which cloud our consciousness. And with those motivations, then, we will not be satisfied. The material things cannot satisfy us. So as long as we have material things in our consciousness, we remain dissatisfied. We only get satisfied when we become selfless in our service. So the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to practice selfless devotional service. It is to prepare us to practice and participate in pure devotional service. That is what Prabhupada came to teach us, pure devotional service, unmotivated. And that's why you'll see in the beginning, just like during the week, for the last week I've had a lot of time, so I've been watching some DVDs of Prabhupada. So it's very powerful to watch DVDs of Prabhupada, to watch actual footage of Srila Prabhupada, because every action that Prabhupada performs, every word that he speaks, it is pure devotional service personified. So then we actually understand what is pure devotional service. And Prabhupada, he is, as the pure representative of Rupa Goswami, he is teaching everyone what is pure devotional service. So we saw, just like some of the DVDs, Prabhupada was establishing the movement in India. So Prabhupada took his dancing white elephants to India. And you see many Maharathis on the stage with Prabhupada in the Calcutta Pandal, the Bombay, the Mumbai Pandal programs, Cross Maidan and so forth. You know, Bhavananda Prabhu, Tamal Krishna Goswami, Jaipataka Swami Madhavisa Prabhu, very powerful devotees. Now, if you hear the recollections of these devotees about their service, their association with Prabhupada in those early days, Prabhupada was pushing them so much. You know, it was total surrender. Prabhupada was just pushing them and pushing them and pushing them to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Practically, they had to, you know, almost serve like Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada was doing it out of his natural drive to serve and please Krishna and surrender to Krishna, and he was pushing everyone else to do that too. Because Prabhupada expected complete surrender. Srila Prabhupada expects pure devotional service. It means there's no other motivation. There's no other material desire. Just like Tamal Krishna Maharaji was speaking about going to India with Prabhupada. So he went to India with Prabhupada, and he was a Grihastha at the time. He was the GBC. So he came to India with Prabhupada as a Grihastha, as the GBC. He was Prabhupada's like right-hand man for 4 years, 1970-74. And he said that in the beginning when they arrived there, Prabhupada never even asked him any questions about, in terms of, is his Grihastha ashram comfortable? You know, do you have enough facilities? You know, are you comfortable? Is everything? No, he didn't. Tamal Krishna Maharaj would sleep, you know, on the floor with all the other devotees, and his wife would sleep with all the Mataji's on the floor. You know, and Prabhupada was just preaching and just going on, and you know, there's never any question like, are you comfortable enough? You know, do you have a nice soft bed to sleep on? Do you have a nice couch? Do you have enough stuff? You know, Prabhupada was just marching, you know, to spread Krishna consciousness, and everyone was just expected to keep up like that, and everyone was in ecstasy serving with Prabhupada. You know, this is pure devotional service. He expected complete surrender. So this is the, like, we get, you know, as Grihasthas, we get caught up so much, you know. You know, what sort of couch do we have, and what sort of pillows do we have on the couch, and then I have to have a nice shawl on the end of the couch which matches the pillows, and my lampshade must also be the same colour. Nicely, who cares? You know, Prabhupada did not care. They were telling stories in India that Prabhupada was travelling on the train, and sometimes he would have some Grihastha disciples with him on the train travelling, you know, through India from like one city to the other, and the train would the train stops for the different stations. So they stopped at one station and Prabhupada had a Grihastha couple with him. He said, get off the train and open a temple in this city.
What?
You know, in the middle of the train journey, Prabhupada said, get off the train and open a temple in the city. So they got off the train and they opened a temple in the city. They just started preaching. That was Prabhupada. He was serious. You know? And then Madhavisa Prabhu was telling that they were flying across from I think it was Japan to India, and they were on the flight 36,000 feet in the air, and Prabhupada was sitting there, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was sitting there, and Madhavisa Prabhu was sitting there, and a few other devotees. And Prabhupada to Madhavisa Prabhu, he said, go and ask the hostess if you can lead a kirtan on the microphone. And Madhavisa Prabhu just like looked at Prabhupada, just like, and Prabhupada said, go and ask. So he stood up and he went up to the front of the plane. And he said, my Guru Maharaj, who is the leader of the Hare Krishna movement, which you must have heard of, which is becoming famous around the world, he wants us to do some chanting for the benefit of all the passengers like that. And she said, okay. So he got the microphone and he started leading kirtan. Yeah? Namo Om Vishnu Padaya. Madhavisa Prabhu was empowered, kirtan leader. So Prabhupada's sitting there and Prabhupada begins to tap along, and then, you know, and then Prabhupada and the other devotees, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, now they begin to respond. So Madhavisa Prabhu is leading kirtan, you know, for like 10 minutes on the plane, 36,000 feet in the air, and Prabhupada and the other devotees are responding, and then they come and, you know, and then at the end, you know, she said, thank you very much, and the Mahasa said, oh, that was very nice. But then came and sat next to Prabhupada. This was what the movement was like. Yeah. So this is what Prabhupada expects. Prabhupada expects pure devotional service. He expects complete surrender. So we should not become complacent or comfortable in our devotional lives. We should always be pushing ourselves. There should be more and more and more surrender like that. Now, what is the best way to surrender? Prabhupada, because I was watching in his DVDs, then Prabhupada would just go around India. He was having these Pandal programs, and they were just having big kirtans. Right? And Prabhupada said, one of the disciples said, when they were remembering Prabhupada, that Prabhupada said, "I am a kirtan man." Prabhupada just enjoyed kirtan. Big kirtan. So this is our program. Prabhupada, and we'll read tonight in one of the purports, and Prabhupada said, just by kirtan and prasadam distribution, it's enough for the masses in Kali Yuga. We just have kirtan, we spread kirtan like that, and then distribute prasadam, and in between we have some Krishna katha, and that's enough. And that's what Prabhupada expected. He expected all of us to provide opportunities for others to hear kirtan, to take prasad, and to hear some Krishna katha. So that is our seva to Prabhupada, that is our surrender. And it is glorious. If the grihasthas can do this, this is glorious. Because the grihasthas are working full time. And then they come home, and then they hold preaching programs in the evenings or on the weekends. So that's glorious. How pleased is Prabhupada? That he's seen that this is taking place. So much surrender. So that is the mood of our movement. Our movement is not a complacent movement. Prabhupada Vishnu Swami said one time, he said it was a pushing movement. Because Prabhupada is always pushing everyone. So we have to surrender. And this is how we purify the heart. This is how we understand what is pure devotional service. By serving the Sankirtan, why did Prabhupada put so much emphasis on preaching? Because you learn to become selfless. How do you understand the Bhagavatam if you don't become selfless? The more selfless you are, the more you understand the Bhagavatam. Otherwise it's just theoretical. So therefore you have to preach, you have to surrender. And by doing that, then you'll actually get realizations. The two things are directly connected. We don't have to think that we cannot understand the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam unless we, become somewhat esoteric in our approach. Simply we have to follow the process which Prabhupada taught us, which is to preach Krishna consciousness, and then everything will deepen automatically. And then we will get access, we will get mercy, we will get qualification to understand these deeper pastimes of Krishna. Otherwise it will remain theoretical to a great degree. Any questions or comments?
What he's teaching is Vasudeva Katha Ruchi, taste for developing Sankirtan.
Anything else? Okay. So in the second paragraph, Srila Prabhupada says that the fifth goal of life, the panchama purushartha, which means the the fifth goal of life actually, it is bhakti. The four purushartas which are spoken of in the Vedas, dharma, artha, karma, moksha. So everyone in the world thinks, all materialistic people, karmis and jnanis, they think this is the goal of life. Dharma. Dharma means you have to be dharmic, which means you have to be very religious, very proper in your conduct. Just like I remember quite a few years ago we had some, I was teaching the children, like Abhishek and Pavan and Surya and Surya, like that, some of the girls, Rohini. Yeah, Rohini.
She was mentioning the other day. When you spoke, she stopped going. She came
to workshop. Yeah, we used to have, maybe five or seven years ago, we used to have classes with the children when they were in their teenage. So one time they were invited to go to another group, another Hindu group, and to have like a debate about Bhagavad Gita or something like that. So some of the boys and the girls went and they had some debate with the other group about the debate, and then at the end one of the people stood up who was the adjudicator to decide which side was And they said, they stood up at the end and they said, you know, because our devotees spoke and they said, Bhakti is supreme, and the others spoke and they said, whatever is supreme. And then at the end, the person stood up and said, Dharma is supreme. Not correct. Not correct. Dharma is supreme. What is Dharma? You don't even know what Dharma is. What is Dharma? You know. So, yeah, but he wasn't saying Sanatana Dharma. He was just saying, yeah, we knew what we were talking about, but they don't even know what they're talking about. So they just said Dharma is supreme. So this is what people think. Dharma is the goal of life. You just be religious, you just be pious, you just be a good person, right? And then you will attain some exalted destination. So Dharma is the goal of life. Some people think Artha is the goal of life. These days everyone thinks Artha is the goal of life. Okay? The more wealth I have, the more I'm successful. This is the religion of this age. Money is God. So that is what the world is captivated by these days. So Dharma, Artha, Karma. Karma means sense gratification. So practically the whole world thinks sense gratification. This is the goal of life, to enjoy my senses unrestrictedly. In the Vedic sense, sense gratification is restricted. It is not unrestricted. These days people think unrestricted sense gratification is the goal. And then if you become frustrated, then moksha, liberation. So these are the four goals of human life. But actually the fifth goal of human life, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs us, is the actual goal of human life is bhakti. It is devotion to Krishna. That is the goal. And everything else is simply subordinate. And Bilba Mangala Thakur, I think, he said that Dharma, Artha, Karma and Moksha are doorkeepers at the house of Bhakti. In other words, when you have Bhakti, the others are automatically servants. You see, for example, for a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, then Dharma, Artha, Karma and Moksha, they are just servants. Like that. Prabhupada was one of the wealthiest men in India by 1977. If you added up the accumulated assets of ISKCON as a body, a worldwide body, he's one of the richest people in India, which was predicted early on in his life. He would become very wealthy. But Prabhupada did not establish his wealth based upon material pursuit. Prabhupada was simply preaching pure devotion, pure bhakti, and then artha, dharma, karma, moksha, all these things, they serve the devotee. They're given automatically. Now, just like we see in this pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, a little further on, what happens when he leaves this world? Okay, he gets into the Pushpa Vimana, he gets into the flower aeroplane, he stands on the head of death. So moksha is automatically given to a devotee. Automatically the devotee gets liberated. We don't have to strive for it separately. We simply have to serve Krishna. Please our guru and please Krishna, and automatically we'll be given liberation. That's not even a concern for us. Liberation is the goal of life for so many spiritual people. But for a devotee, it's just automatic. Just automatic. Liberation is given. Four types of Vaishnava liberation. It's automatically given to a devotee. So a devotee simply concentrates upon the fifth goal of life, which is bhakti. Uttama bhakti, which means pure devotional service. We have to concentrate on making our devotional service pure, which means unmotivated and uninterrupted. This satisfies Krishna. So we have to work on the quality of our devotional service. Not that our devotional service is motivated and impure. We have to work on the quality of our service. It's become completely selfless and surrendered. Any other points?
Your Kashyap is said in the second chapter of the first canto.
Yeah. This is the definition of pure devotional service. This verse. Okay. The The great sage Maitreya continued, my dear Vidura, when Dhruva Maharaj, who had good intentions in his heart, finished his prayer, the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, who was very kind to his devotees and servants, congratulated him, speaking as follows. The Personality of Godhead said, very interesting, because yesterday I went to the farm to give the Sunday Feast lecture, and I was saying this to the people, how do you know about God? Because in most of the other teachings in the world, they don't give you so much knowledge about God. Yeah, but here, what does this verse say? God himself is about to speak directly. You generally don't get this anywhere else. We're about to hear God himself speak. What does God say when he speaks? Does he just say, Om? No, he does exactly, he says many things. So this is what he says. My dear Dhruva, son of the king, you have executed pious vows, and I also know the desire within your heart. Although your desire is very ambitious and very difficult to fulfill, I shall favour you with its fulfilment. All good fortune unto you. Leela Mahi, can you read the second paragraph?
The Lord approved Dhruva Maharaja. Dhruva would not be relative of the Lord's love. He entered Dhruva not to be worried, and he childishly had material desires, and at the same time had a few aspirations to be a great devotee. Generally, the Lord does not award a few devotees material opulence, even though he may be jealous. But Dhruva Maharaja is so different. The Lord knew that he was such a great devotee, and that in spite of having material offering, he would never be deviated from the love of God. This example illustrates that a highly qualified devotee can have the facility of material enjoyment and at the same time exude the love of God. This, however, was a special case for Dhruva.
So what are the points here? Srila Prabhupada speaks about this in the end of the Krishna book. He said that generally the devotees of Lord Shiva are rich, but generally the devotees of Krishna are poor, because one of Krishna's names is Hari. Hari means Hari is the name for lion. The lion is called Hari. So when the lion comes, if he walks into this room right now, what will happen? Right, we'll say, we will say, take whatever you want. It is yours. There is no opposition. Right, he just, whatever he wants, he takes it. Right. So Krishna is known as Hari, which means one who takes everything. So that is Krishna's nature. It's his position, it is his potency. He just takes whatever he wants. So, for the devotees, generally you see the Vaishnavas are not rich. Generally, because Krishna takes everything material, because material acquisition is a impediment to devotional life, unless the devotee is very exalted. But you'll see, even when we get a new pair of Crocs, or we get a new IBM, or we get a new watch, or we get a new beanie, or we get a new whatever we get, and we get, ooh, so attached. It's so nice. I have a new pair of earrings, I have a new sari. So nice. So this is our nature. The nature of the material world is that we become bewildered. Bhoga Aishwarya Prasaktana. By bhoga, by Aishwarya. By sense gratification and by opulence, material opulence. So when you become too much attached to opulence and sense gratification, your resolute determination to serve Krishna becomes weakened. So therefore, generally, Krishna does not give material acquisition or sense gratification to the devotees, because they become bewildered. And then that you will lose your focus on spiritual life. Just like sometimes devotees, they try to leave Krishna consciousness because they think, I can enjoy again in this material world. What did Prabhupada call this? Most other points, yes. But he said blue.
Blue.
Yeah. All of us are on the ship of Lord Chaitanya, going back home back to Godhead, and we look over the edge in the material ocean, and we think, I can still enjoy. And we jump in to make a big splash, and we go bloop. So sometimes devotees think we can go back and enjoy the material world, but it is not possible. Because Krishna will put sand in your sweet rice. Whenever you go to try and enjoy separate from him, we see time and time again, it is not possible. Devotees become dissatisfied. So many times we've seen devotees have left the movement and have tried to enjoy some sense gratification of what takes place. They just get frustrated and then they come back again. So that is the position of the devotees of Krishna. You cannot enjoy ever again in this material world. Krishna will not allow you to enjoy ever again in this material world. If you try to be separate from him, it will not work. It will never work. And if you try to have too much material opulence separate from him, then Krishna will just do it in such a way that you will become dissatisfied. So that is the nature of the devotees of Krishna. Prabhupada points out the devotees of Lord Shiva, they are wealthy. But generally, the devotees of Krishna, they are not wealthy. The Vaishnavas are generally poor. Unless Krishna wants to give some opulence. But that opulence must be used in the service of Krishna. Just like you see Prabhupada's disciple, Ambarish Prabhu, who is Alfred Forward. He is the grandson of Henry Forward. So he's extremely wealthy. But then he uses the wealth in the service of Krishna. And he just gave $10 million to a few years back for the Mayapur temple, the Chandradaya Mandir. So let's build this thing. So he's using his wealth. Personally, he's very simple. He sleeps on very simple, he just sleeps on the mattress on the floor. He's very simple, devotee. Does not get involved in material opulence. Okay. So Krishna may give the wealth, but the wealth must be used in Krishna's service. Any points?
About Garshira, I think he knows the past as well as the present and the future. So if he thinks that somebody is just a bit lost, but he's really spiritually inclined, then he sends them to Sanatana Goswami as well.
Sure.
All the devotees?
No.
No.
To the person whom he thinks is really spiritually inclined, he sends to some Vaishnava or people like Sanatana Goswami.
Like that, yeah. Yeah. We worship Lord Shiva, but our worship of Lord Shiva is different.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you worship him for getting the devotion, you're
happy. Yeah, that's our whole mood with our worship is very different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm listening.
It's interesting that I do not know about the disciples of Lord Vishnu being poor. The serious Iyer Iyengar group in Tamil Nadu, the richest family, I'm not sure whether they're Iyer Iyengar or whether they're Shaiva followers or Vishnu followers. But at least Lord Vishnu temples are very opulent compared to Shiva.
In India.
In India, in general, all Vishnu temples are very opulent, very rich compared to Shiva temples. Although Vishnu disciples are devoted to
Yeah, that's okay.
Just an observation.
That's true, what you're saying is true, because Prabhupada points out Lord Shiva lives under a tree. He lives under a tree, but his followers are very wealthy. Whereas Lord Vishnu lives in the most opulent palace. But his servants are poor. So this is the test. This is the test. Which God do you want to worship? The God who's rich and keeps all of us poor? Uh-huh. or the God who is poor and keeps all of us rich, sort of like that.
There is a story for when Tenali Ramakrishna, he was in the courtyard of
Krishnadevaraya,
like in Birbal was the in Akbar's courtyard. So for him, Mother Kalika, she appears and she says that, what is that you want? If you take the curd, yogurt from my right hand, you get jnana, and if you take milk from my left hand, you get I think wealth. Then he says, well, mother, please give me both, I want to look at them. Therefore, you take both the cups, mix them, and then take the bread.
It takes what?
He
uses both cups.
Yeah, I know that. And then what happens?
He becomes a Vikatakavi. Vikatakavi, in English, what do we say? That he has the ability, whether he reads from the front or the back, it's the same word, it comes up.
And
yeah, so he became a very famous poet, and so much so that it was because of him that Krishnadevaraya could rule for a fairly long time, protecting the kingdom from the evil. So therefore, if we have to worship, why not we worship both Lord Shiva and Vishnu? Then we can get both of them.
So what does the Bhagavad Gita say, Shri?
Why should we follow the rules of the equal the exceptions, isn't it?
The Bhagavad Gita says also, why speculate? Okay.
That is what makes the
exceptions in your mother.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead continued, my dear Dhruva, I shall award you the glowing planet known as the Pole Star, which will continue to exist even after the dissolution at the end of the millennium. No one has ever ruled this planet, which is surrounded by all the solar systems, planets and stars. All the luminaries in the sky circumambulate this planet, just as bulls tread around a central pole for the purpose of crushing grains. Keeping the pole star to their right, all the stars inhabited by the great sages like Dharma, Agni, Kashyapa and Shukra circumambulate this planet, which continues to exist even after the dissolution of all others. After your father goes to the forest and awards you the rule of his kingdom, you will rule continuously the entire world for 36,000 years, and all your senses will continue to be as strong as they are now. You will never become old.
Muhammad, can you read that? In circuit, people generally live for 100,000 years. Dhruva Maharaj ruling the world for 36,000 years was quite possible in your case.
So we see that that is the effect of the mode of goodness, because in Satya Yuga, people are primarily in the mode of goodness. Whereas in Kali Yuga, people are primarily in the mode of passion and ignorance. So therefore, what happens is the duration of life becomes shorter. The more you live in the mode of passion, and the more you live in the mode of ignorance, the shorter your life becomes. The more you situate yourself in Sattva Gun, or the mode of goodness, then the more your life increases. Of that. So you see in Satya Yuga, people were living for 100,000 years. So Dhruva Maharaji ruled for 36,000 years. That's a very long time. So how is it possible? Because people were living in Satya Yuga. So therefore, Bhagavatam teaches us that we must live in Satya Yuga and then cultivate Krishna consciousness from this platform. Just like I'm telling the devotees at the moment, then you should not be working too much. Because some devotees, they're going to work 8 in the morning, coming back 8 o'clock at night. So how do you expect to practice sadhana if you're working this much? So you have to organize your life in such a way that you do not have to work this kind of life as much as possible. You have to have a balanced life in which you can practice sadhana and you can increase your Krishna consciousness. There must be a balance between the two. Not that you become too passionate or too ignorant and then neglect your sadhana. I will practice it in the future, I will practice it in the future. But sometimes that time does not come. We waste so much time waiting to become Krishna conscious. But we have to become Krishna conscious now. Because we don't know how long we have. We could die at any moment. Devotees do not know when they will die, when you will leave this world. So you have to prepare yourself. So therefore, we have to learn to live in sattva guna, which means we work. Because we have to work, we have family, we have children, like that. But it has to be balanced.
Devotees don't know when they die. What did you say?
We don't know when we will die.
Devotees?
Everyone, no one knows when they will die.
How they don't know?
Because no one knows.
Only Krishna knows all the time, no?
Only Krishna knows when we will die.
Oh, Krishna will tell them.
No, he doesn't tell them.
Huh?
It comes when, it just comes when it's going to come.
So they don't
know? No, they don't know. The Lord continued, sometime in the future, your brother, Uttama, will go hunting in the forest, and while absorbed in hunting, he will be killed. Your stepmother, Suruchi, being maddened upon the death of her son, will go to search him out in the forest, but she will be devoured by a forest fire.
Guru Maharaj came to the forest to search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with a relenting spirit against his stepmother. His stepmother had insulted Dhruva, who was not an ordinary person but a great Vaishnava. An offense at the lotus feet of the Vaishnava is the latest offense in this world. Because of having insulted Dhruva Maharaj, Suruchi would become mad upon the death of her son and would enter a forest fire, and thus her life would be ended. This was specifically mentioned by the Lord to Dhruva because he was determined for revenge against her. From this, we should take the lesson that we should never try to insult a Vaishnava. Not only should we not insult a Vaishnava, but we should not insult anyone unnecessarily. When Suruchi insulted Dhruva Maharaj, he was just a child. She of course did not know that Dhruva was a great recognized Vaishnava, and so her offense was committed unknowingly. When one serves a Vaishnava unknowingly, one still gets the good results. But if one unknowingly insults a Vaishnava, one suffers the bad results. A Vaishnava is especially favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pleasing him or displeasing him directly affects the pleasure and displeasure of the Supreme Lord. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his 8th stanza of prayer to the spiritual master, exclaims, Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasada. The spirit is the spiritual master who is a pure Vaishnava, one pleases the personality of Godhead. But if one displeases the spiritual master, one does not know where he is going.
So what are some of the points in this purport?
One should never offend a Vaishnava.
No, he was a devotee.
I was one.
Yeah. He was a devotee. Prabhupada mentions he was already a great soul. So Prabhupada mentions that one should not offend a devotee, one should not offend anybody. Because this is called Vaishnava Aparadha and Jiva Aparadha or Jana Aparadha. Even if you commit an offence to a common living entity, you will get a reaction. Because one must learn to respect all living entities. And especially, we must not offend Vaishnavas, devotees of Krishna. We've mentioned this in a previous section. We said there are 6 types of offences that one can commit to Vaishnavas. What are the 6? To not to be happy when one sees a Vaishnava, yeah? To be envious of a Vaishnava, yeah? To become angry at a Vaishnava, yeah? That's the last one, to kill a Vaishnava.
To not receive
him.
To not offer obeisances.
Yeah, to not offer obeisances when one sees it. And one more. Yeah, not to blaspheme at the voice. Okay. So these are 6 types of aparadhas, Vaishnava aparadha. So one must avoid Vaishnava aparadha.
So what does blaspheme mean?
Blaspheme means like criticizing the devotees like that, or putting them down or criticizing them or like that. Okay. So one must not offend a devotee. One must not create ill feelings in the heart of a devotee. Because if, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, if the devotee feels ill towards you, this will not please Krishna. And Krishna is seeing our service and he says, oh, this person is serving me, but this advanced devotee is not pleased with him. That does not please Krishna. Krishna becomes pleased when Krishna's devotees are pleased with us. Therefore Prabhupada quotes, Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasado Yasya Prasadam Nagati Kutopi. You must please Krishna's devotees. If Krishna's devotees are pleased with you, then Krishna is pleased with you. If Krishna's devotees bless you, then Krishna blesses you. But if you do not get the blessings of Krishna, Krishna's devotees, you do not get the blessings of Krishna. So a Kanishta Adhikari, a neophyte devotee who thinks, I can serve Krishna, I can please Krishna, that is enough. No. A Majjhima Adhikari, a more advanced devotee, understands, I must please Krishna's devotees. If Krishna's devotees are pleased with me, automatically Krishna is pleased with me. If the spiritual master is pleased with me, automatically Krishna is pleased with me. This is how we receive Krishna's mercy. We don't approach Krishna directly. We approach Krishna through his servants. And when Krishna's servants are pleased with us, then Krishna becomes pleased with us.
The recent pastime about the devotee trying to hold and instruct the spiritual master and trying to be in the mood of Krishna by bypassing the spiritual master. There was this devotee who Prabhupada requested to do paintings. He was a very good painter apparently. I don't know the name of the devotee. He displayed various paintings, and in one particular painting, Prabhupada watched all the paintings, and this painting Prabhupada couldn't understand the painting. He said, what is this you have done? He said that I have drawn Krishna and some pastime he had depicted, which was not nowhere in the Shastra. Srila Prabhupada got annoyed with it. Which scripture is this from? He said, this is not from any scripture. I have just done based on my own mood. So Srila Prabhupada said that the painting has to be from scriptures. But then the devotee, you know, very smartly answered Prabhupada that Krishna is unlimited. So Srila Prabhupada said, yeah, Krishna is unlimited, but you are limited. Then the speaker is saying that one must have absorption in devotional service, and then when we do our service, then we have to try to please the spiritual master. Our excellence should not be such that it is displeasing. We should not get absorbed with, you know, some other with showing off our talents when we do service. And it should be pleasing to the spiritual
master. Yeah, very, very good example.
Difficult when you are talented.
Say it again.
Very difficult if you are really talented materialistic. Sometimes material talents are like impediments. You don't have anything, you don't have that simplicity. But if you really have it, comes something in it.
Yeah, but then that's Maya. Because then you don't understand the talent comes from Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the ability in man. Krishna can take the talent away anytime. Just like one of my favorite services, I like to dance for Krishna. Have you seen me dance recently? Not so impressive. Okay. So if you're proud, then Krishna will take away your ability. Krishna can take your ability anytime. Again, become a mouse. So, do not become proud, because that is Maya. You know, Maya means I have the ability. As soon as you say I have, that is false ego. And Krishna gave it to you, and Krishna can take it away anytime. So, what is your ability? So, do not think it is yours.
We used to meditate on these verses. Always the Lord is like relaxing in the heart of the devotees, so the Vaishnavas are to be worshipped. sense of the form of Krishna. So you are praying to God, so who is Vaishnava? God or to Vaishnava? I'm not dealing with you, Vela. You are praying to God, so you are the Atam. Sanskrit word telling to Vaishnava. So Vaishnava is Krishna, isn't it?
No, Vaishnava means devotee of Krishna.
So she is praying to the devotee of Krishna?
Yeah, that's okay.
This son who died in battlefield, was that because of his Vaishnava or because of his karma?
Means there must have been some pride there, because he was sitting on the lap and Dhruva was not allowed to sit on the lap, so maybe there was some pride there. Because when someone else is put down, then we think, oh, that is, subtly we think, oh, that is good because now I am in the superior position.
Before five, we say that generally there are no karmic reactions because we are in
the
ignorance.
Yeah, but some Vaishnava Parad may have been there. These are very great personalities.
Maybe that was Sukhani's mother. Because the mother, when she found out that she was
Could have been. It's not mentioned specifically, but he may have been thinking, he may have had some pride there. Okay. When others are put down, then sometimes we subtly we think, oh, that is good because that makes me look superior. So he was maybe having some feeling like that and then he got some reaction. Okay.
And you are saying that just her physical face had shriveled up, like she was distressed and there was so much fire and anxiety in her. So he said that he like reminded us that now we don't know how soon she died. That she caused this distress for Sunity and she was burning like a forest fire within her heart of water. That is why Sunity had to die in front of her. That's how she was doing it. Because she was such a nice little being.
Okay. The Lord continued, I am the heart of all sacrifices. You will be able to perform many great sacrifices and also give great charities. In this way you will be able to enjoy the blessings of material happiness in this life, and at the time of death you will be able to remember me. Take it off front, please. Can you read that?
The most important factor in this world is the Lord's instructions regarding how to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead at the end of life. Ante Narayana Smriti. The result of whatever we do in executing spiritual activities is successful if we can remember Narayana, Supreme Personality of Godhead. This program of constant remembrance can be disturbed by many things. But Guru Maharaj's life would be so pure as assured by the Lord Himself that Dhruva would never forget him. Thus at the time of his death he would remember the Supreme Lord, and before his death he would enjoy this material world, not by sense gratification, but by performing great sacrifices. As stated in the Vedas, when one performs great sacrifices, he must give charity, not only to the Brahmanas, but also to the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras. It is assured here that Dhruva Maharaj will be able to perform such activities. In this age of Kali, however, the great sacrifice is the performance of Sankirtan Yajna. Our Krishna consciousness movement is designed to teach people and to learn ourselves the exact instruction of the Personality of Godhead. In this way, we shall continuously perform the Sankirtan Yajna and continuously chant the Hare Krishna mantras. Then at the end of our life, we shall certainly be able to remember Krishna, and our program of life will be successful. In this age, distribution of prasad has replaced distribution of money. No one has sufficient money to distribute, but if we distribute Krishna prasad as far as possible, this is more valuable than the distribution of money.
So what are some of the points in this
purpose? One devotee was begging Jesus, that's why he went and covered the donkey, the yamuna.
he refused to give himself up. And he went and killed himself in conscience of it. He did not have money to buy himself.
Any other points?
In Kali Yuga, Sankirtan is most important. And after Sankirtan, we should be prasadam. Instead of giving money, because nobody has got much money.
So it says here, Ante Narayana Smriti. Ante means at the end. So how will you remember Krishna at the end? You have to practice remembering Krishna during your life. If you don't practice, you know, sadhana means practice. If you do not practice remembering Krishna, how do you think you'll remember Krishna at the time of death? It's not automatic. Krishna doesn't just automatically spring into the mind. Now, you have to practice remembering Krishna. Now, you have to become very serious in your practice, because at the time of death, you may remember anything. Whatever you are most attached to, that may come in your mind. So therefore, you have to practice remembering Krishna. Because if you practice, then Krishna will come into your mind at the time of death. And that is success. Success is Ante Narayana Smriti. It is remembering Krishna. Okay. So, Prabhupada points out, we can live happily in this world. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, there is nothing lacking in the material world. Actually, devotees are happy. Just like I was reading the other day, Jijumna Swami was writing and he said, I'm very happy. Well, devotees are not unhappy, we're happy. We've got everything we need in this material world. We don't have any anxiety. If you do not have Krishna consciousness, it doesn't matter what you have materially, you will never be happy. And this is what people cannot figure out, just the lost equation. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says there's nothing lacking in this world except Krishna consciousness. But if you have Krishna consciousness, then the material world is fine. Everything is there. Everything is supplied to us by Krishna, and simply we serve Krishna. Now Prabhupada points out that the duty of everyone in this material world is simply to chant and to teach others how to chant. That is our mission. We have to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and we have to teach others the process of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Because why do we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? What's the goal of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra?
To remember Krishna.
Yeah, to remember Krishna. Ante Narayana Smriti. That's why you're chanting. And why are you chanting? So that you remember Krishna. That's what you're chanting. That's why we've been having some classes on chanting in the evenings at Krishna Gathati themselves. Because we're trying to emphasize to devotees that this is how you remember Krishna. Your chanting has to become cultivated so that it leads to you remembering Krishna. Now that's the goal. After 10, 20 years of chanting, 15, 20 years of chanting, this should be your state of consciousness. When you chant, you remember Krishna. So we have to cultivate that kind of chanting, a deeper state of chanting, a deeper state of consciousness. So we remember Krishna, and then we have to teach others this process. That is our duty. When you become strong as a swimmer, then you have to teach others how to swim. That is the program. If you're a strong swimmer yourself, it is your duty to teach others how to do it. So if you become strong in your chanting, in your devotion, in your bhakti, now you have to teach others how to also chant with bhakti. So Prabhupada says that our program in this material world is very simple. We simply chant, distribute prasadam, and be happy. Srila Prabhupada says that no program is complete without prasadam distribution. This is ISKCON. This is the difference. Especially the Melbourne Temple. World champions. Under the mercy of Radha Balava, Gwanitai, Jagannath Balaram's budget, by their empowered representatives, headed by Sriman Kalma Prabhu, who set up the standards in this temple for prasadam. distribution of that. And now it's been maintained very wonderfully by Aniruddha Kumari Chinchirupa Mataji. That prasada distribution is so powerful. No program is complete without prasada. So this is our program. We preach, we teach others how to chant, we give some Krishna Katha, and then we give prasad to purify their consciousness and to attract them to Krishna. In 1965, 66, 67, when Prabhupada started his preaching at 26 Second Avenue, there's one letter, and Prabhupada writes, he said, in the beginning they were not coming to hear my lecture. They were coming for the prasad. Prabhupada says, that's why people came. That's why everyone comes in here. The prasad. I remember the first time I walked in here, into this temple, and I thought, it's such a wonderful place. And devotees started to preach to me, and I thought, it's very nice. And then they said, do you want to have lunch? And I said, no problem. So I went upstairs, and then they gave me prasad, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. And then at the end, then they gave me camphor sweet rice. And I tasted that and I thought, wow, what is this one? And then the devotee came around and said, do you want some more? And I said, no problem. And then I thought, what is this place? You can have as much as you want. And that's my program since I joined. Take prasad and be happy. Simple. Like that. Be satisfied. Take your prasad. Be happy. So this is the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Prabhupada said this is our program. Chant, take prasad, and be happy. It is not a complicated process. Prabhupada said, I am a kirtan man. Just chant, have some Krishna katha, take some prasad, be happy. It's very simple. But extremely potent. Prabhupada said, just by these two things, just by taking prasad and chanting, you will go back to Godhead. That is a potency. But it means that you have to come to the consciousness of honouring Krishna's prasad. One time in 19... I'm trying to think what year it was. Might have been like 1969 maybe. Then Prabhupada went to London and they had the installation of Radha London Ishwara, and Prabhupada said, write a invitation to all the guests. He said to Tamal Krishnamurti, he said, write an invitation to all the guests. So Tamal Krishnamurti wrote an invitation and then he showed it to Prabhupada and it said, come and take prasad. And Prabhupada said, no, change it. He said, come and honour prasad. Because this is the consciousness. When you take prasad, you must honour Krishna's prasad. That is not, prasad is not for sense gratification. Prasad is to be honoured and respected. It is Radha Balabha's mercy. If we get some Maha Prasad, then it is a great fortune. So it must be honoured. So when you develop your consciousness that you take prasad as the remnants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to honour prasad, as he taught us to honour prasad, he would take it as the remnants of Lord Jagannath. He would honour the prasad. So when you take prasad in the right consciousness and you chant Hare Krishna purely, then you'll go back to Godhead. That's how simple the process is. But we have to perfect our application of the process. We have to perfect our chanting and perfect our consciousness while taking prasad, and that's enough. I mean, you'll transcend. Very simple process. But we have to do it properly. That's the point. That's it. Any points?
I'd just like to share a small pastime of Janan Prabhu. And he used to be in the Sankirtan ranks. And he then get stopped at some halfway through. So Janan Prabhu used to carry the picture of Lord Krishna and Prabhupada. So he used to go right in front of a tree, like an apple tree or orange tree, and offer that whole tree to Lord Krishna. So in the future, if anybody is put from that particular tree, it becomes Krishna.
Okay, so we've got a couple of more verses. We'll just finish these verses. The Personality of Godhead continued, my dear Dhruva, after your material life in this body, you will go to my planet, which is always offered obeisances by the residents of all other planetary systems. It is situated above the planets of the seven rishis, and having gone there, you will never have to come back again to this material world. So, this particular planet is called the Pole Star. Is it visible in the southern hemisphere? Can you see it, or is it only visible in the northern hemisphere? I haven't researched it because I haven't had time. Okay. Yeah, it might only be the north. Okay. I can't remember if you can, I don't know if you can even see it in this, but there's one planet which is fixed and all the other planets are moving around it. Even the scientists, they know it's there. It's called the Pole Star. So this particular star is Dhruvaloka. It's the planet which Dhruva attained. It's where he resides now, is on that planet. And it is Svetadvi. It is the Vaikuntha planet. When you read in the Krishna book in the beginning of the 10th canto, when the devatas go with Lord Brahma to the ocean of milk and they pray to Shiradakshay Vishnu, that is that planet. That is the Pole Star. It is a Vaikuntha planet. And Prabhupada explains when the material world is destroyed, that planet remains. It is a spiritual planet within this material world. So that's what Dhruva Maharaj got.
Is that what?
Yeah, it's like on this planet there's an ocean, right? So on that planet there's an ocean. And on the ocean of milk, then Shiradakshay Vishnu is there. It's a whole planet, so there's many things there. It means like someone like Agni or Shukra. It means a particular person who is ruling over the place. Shiradakshay Vishnu may not be ruling over the place. He's there, but he may not be active. So it means like a king, like that. Okay. He's already there.
He was living there after he saw the Lord.
It says 36. Yeah, he goes there straight away. But it says 36,000 years, which means such years.
Yes, but also, you know, Paul is like Kunta planet, and there is no death on that one. So how he could step on that, and how Uttama could leave the body, and all these things, how could that happen?
No, Uttama left the body not on that planet. No, that's before he goes there. They're not there already. After this pastime takes place, then he goes to the Pole Star.
After
he rules for 36,000 years, after that he goes. After that he rules the Pole Star. He rules 36,000 years here, and then he goes to the Pole Star. Is that what it says?
Before he enters into the airplane. He just steps on the deck and then goes to the...
Then goes to the Pole Star. The great sage Maitreya said, after being worshipped and honoured by the boy, Dhruva Maharaj, and after offering him his abode, Lord Vishnu, on the back of Garuda, returned to his abode as Dhruva Maharaj looked on. Despite having achieved the desired result of his determination by worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, Dhruva Maharaj was not very pleased. Then he returned to his home. Sri Vidura inquired, "My dear Brahmana, the abode of the Lord is very difficult to attain. It can be attained only by pure devotional service, which alone pleases the most affectionate, merciful Lord. Dhruva Maharaj achieved this position even in one life, and he was very wise and conscientious. Why then was he not very pleased?" So, tomorrow night we'll begin from chapter verse 29, and we'll go up to around about verse 40 or something like that. We'll see. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.